Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
And we are back. Welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I'm Menace. I'm joined by Paul Dennett. Paul, how are you?
G'day, Menace. G'day, everyone. I'm good. It's going to be a fun show. If you've got a couple of hiccups, I'm sure you'll get over them.
Yeah, you'll have to scare me with some cricket stats or something. We took an unscheduled break last week, but we're back. We've got almost a little two-part show here. We've got our super over, so we're going to start off with our top six talking points from the IPL's first week and a half. So we've got the super over to kick things off. Then there's a bit of Australian cricket news to wrap things up since we last recorded. Paul, should we get into it with the IPL? We're 14 games in. There's already a lot to talk about.
Absolutely, Menas. Now, if anybody out there is still unconvinced as to whether they want to give the IPL a chance, I don't know, for some listeners that would be an amazing concept because in some parts of the world it's number one, but there are still pockets of fans in Australia and England and other parts of the world who have never experienced it. You could have done a lot worse than to tune in to the game that was on last night, one of the two games on last night, Gujarat Titans up against the Kolkata Knight Riders. This is the first ball of our super over. So we're going to have six snappy topics. And Menas, they got to the point where Kolkata, chasing Gujarat's total of 4 for 204, needed 39 from 9. Now, my whole life, the moment when you can hit every ball for 4 and not win has always been like a cutoff. I know you technically can still win, but at that point, I've never seen a side in all my life win from there. And it actually annoys me when the commentators give them a chance. Like, oh, you know, all they've got to do is hit 5 sixes and 4 fours or whatever else. It's like, guys, the game is over. Stop trying to promote it. And that's what we got to last night, didn't we?
Absolutely. And I just want to echo your sentiments about, you know, if you're sort of sitting on the fence about the IPL, you certainly should get into it because pretty soon you're going to have no choice. It's going to be running like 8-9 months of the year. There's going to be no other cricket to watch. It's just going to be all IPL franchises. So you better get on board or find a new sport.
I've always, at this point, whenever we get to this point, I always echo what our friend of the show, Patrick Avenell, says that in 10 years' time, the Ashes will consist of a 5-match T20 series between Chennai Super Kings and Mumbai Indians. So, yeah, look forward to that, everyone.
Dhoni will still be playing. All right, now, yeah, let's get into the first ball. So you mentioned it. So we had not just one of the games of the – well, not the game of the IPL so far. These hiccups are really driving me nuts. this is going to be like the hiccup episode of Cricket Unfiltered.
Let me scare you. I don't like DRS.
No, oh, Jesus. Who is it over there?
Just for anyone watching, that was a joke to try to scare him. I do like DRS.
Yes, please, please. You don't want that label. But we not just saw, we're talking about, a feat that's never been achieved before in any men's T20 cricket game. So Gujarat batted first, and they made 204 for four. Vijay Shankar made 63 off 24 balls at a strike rate of 262. And he scored 40. He helped Gujarat score 45 runs in the last two overs. So an incredible finish for Gujarat. 207, you're thinking, right, they're looking pretty good here. And then out come the Kolkata Knight Riders, and they get off to a pretty good start. Venkatesh Iyer makes 83 off 40. Rana made 45 off 29. And they're sticking with it. But then the Gujarat captain, Rashid Khan, just comes in and takes a hat trick. And he gets Andre Russell out. Then he gets Narayan. Then he gets Shardul Thakur. So a really good hat trick for Rashid Khan. And at that point, the Kolkata Knight Riders are a 7 for 155 in the 17th over. And really, the game's looking gone for Kolkata. And then it got down to 39 off 9, as Paul said. And then in the last over, the first ball was a single to get Singh on strike. And then he hit five sixes in a row to win the game. Just incredible. So ESPN Quick Info have almost like a win viz. And they had at the end of ball one of the last over, Kolkata just had a 1.29% chance. And then after ball two, a 0.61% chance. So at the beginning of the over, Kolkata had no chance. They hit five sixes in a row. Incredible. It's the highest number of runs ever scored in the last over of a T20 game to win. The previous high score was 23, scored by the Sixers against the Thunder. There you go, Paul. And the rising Pune Super Giants. So just incredible.
Yeah, and a couple of other incredible points that, as Menas said, Rashid Khan took a hat-trick. The ball, two balls before he took a hat-trick, there was another wicket. Alzari Joseph took a wicket. So they lost 4 for 1 off five balls. And we didn't even mention that in the intro. That's normally the highlight of any game of cricket. And I was talking about how they needed 39 off 9. I'm a bit of a fool because the next ball was a dot ball. So they actually needed 39 off 8. I don't know why I chose that point to draw the line. So they actually needed 39 from 8. So they basically had to score five a ball, and they did it. So, incredible. If you've got a chance, if you've got KO, don't watch the mini. Actually watch the game because you can fast forward to the end. The mini doesn't do it justice because it's sort of it happens too quickly. But if you actually watch the full game, those last couple of overs, and pretend that you don't know it, you'll have a great time.
So the bowler, Yash Dale, bowled the last over for the Gujarat Titans, who conceded the five sixes. And look, Rinku Singh played really well, but those first three or four deliveries were just pies. I mean, the first three sixes were full tosses, ready to be hit. Now, you've still got to hit them, so it's not a knock on the batter. Like, I've seen lots of batters in that situation hit the ball straight down the fielder's throat and get out. So it was still astonishing batting, but it was not good bowling at all. Then the fourth six, I think, was a half tracker, sort of wide enough. He still hit it straight over the bowler's head in a peculiar place. But I got to say, that was some pretty shocking bowling.
Yeah, it was. I didn't mention that. It is true. And short boundaries as well. But still, you can't really take anything away from Rinku and from the batting side. And one of the most exciting games of T20 cricket ever played, I would say.
Rashid Khan now has four T20 hat tricks, the most by any player. All right, so now to our second ball. And this is going to be fun for all you international fans out there, because the Aussies are playing in the IPL and they're not exactly taking it by storm, Paul.
It's pretty embarrassing, actually. It's at the point where watching along, whenever the Aussies are kind of involved, I think, oh, gosh, if I had my money on this match, I'd have it on the other side. Even to the point where the other night, Maxwell came out and smashed one. I think it was a 60 hit. And I actually wrote in my notes thinking, oh, maybe hit a four. And I sort of said, I don't have the same faith that I used to have in Maxwell. And sure enough, next ball, he got clean bowled in a pretty ordinary shot. So, yeah, the Aussies have been particularly disappointing so far. Just going through them with the bat. Tim David, to be fair, they haven't had much opportunity yet. We're only talking 2-3 games into the tournament. So plenty of things can change. Tim David got a few runs the other night. And he got a 31, as the rest of the Mumbai Indians didn't do much. But that's about the only real runs of note. Marcus Stoinis has scored 43 runs, but at a strike rate of 105. Cameron Green has batted twice without looking impressive. He's failed twice. Mitchell Marsh has failed twice. Glenn Maxwell has failed once. The other time he came out and cracked a couple of sixes, so I've still got plenty of hope for him. Matt Short made his debut for the Punjab Kings. Just got the solitary run.
He got a pretty good ball. He got a pretty good ball to get him out, actually.
It's exciting that he's going to be hopefully getting a bit more of an opportunity there. But the big talking point is also David Warner, that as far as runs are going, he's going well. He's scored 158 runs at an average of 53. And to be fair to him, he's been batting often in the middle of a collapse. The Delhi Capitals have not looked at all very good. But the concern is that David Warner's strike rate, he's only scoring at a strike rate of 117. In his last game, when he got out and then they reprieved him because there was not the requisite number of fielders inside the circle. But before they realised that, I think the commentator said something like, you know, it's put him out of his misery kind of thing. And he'd scored 60-odd at the time, went on to make 65. But the joke we're sort of talking about, he's looking morphing into Aaron Finch at the moment, Menace.
Well, he's got about the same strike rate, 117. So I think it's too early to tell with Warner. I echo those sentiments that in the games, it feels like there's been wickets falling around him all the time and he's tried to play responsibly and hold the innings together. In the most recent Capitals game where they were chasing that big Royal score, I felt that Warner, every time he wanted to get going, a wicket or two would fall at the other end and he kind of had to rein it back. So I've still got faith that Warner can do it. I mean, some phenomenal stats. I think he's scored almost 60 scores over 50 in the IPL. He went past 6,000 IPL runs to just the third player to do that. So he's an absolute monster in the IPL. So I've still got a lot of faith, but he'll need to improve his strike rate. He just can't go along hitting it at 120, opening the batting in the IPL. That's not good enough. But I think he needs his teammates to give him a hand.
Definitely. And, I mean, from an Australian point of view, at least he's getting runs. And we looking ahead to the World Test Championship final that's in England and then potentially if he's still on the side for the Ashes. And then for the World Cup that's in India later on in the year, it's at least, you know, it's far better to be averaging 50 at a reasonably respectable rather than superb strike rate than not. Turning our attention to the bowling, Jason Berendorf's copped some tap in the couple of games that he's played. Cameron Green, ditto. Mitch Marsh hasn't really bowled much. Glenn Maxwell's bowled just the one over. Marcus Stoinis hasn't bowled at all. The one positive light has been Nathan Ellis, and he's taken 5 wickets. His economy rate has been 8.5, but I think he looks really good, and I think it's a pleasing confirmation of what we've been feeling, that he's a bowler right at the top of his game, and I hope that the Australian selectors really do have him in their sights for the 50-over World Cup. I think when I said jokingly before that when the Australians are coming out to either bat or bowl, I'm a bit nervous and would have my money on the opposition. The opposite is the case with Ellis. I have a sense of comfort that he's going to do pretty well.
It's a good point you make about the Australian players and the fact that they are not dominating this IPL, and there's not a lot of them. So there's 10 teams in the IPL now, and I think there's only 13 or 14 Australians spread across the 10 teams. So that's not a lot. And I've actually noticed that there's a really international flavour to this tournament, that it used to be, you know, every team wanted the Aussies or perhaps a few Poms or West Indians, but there's players from everywhere. There's an Irish bowler, Josh Little. There's Gurbaz from Afghanistan. There's Rajapaksa from Sri Lanka. There's a real sprinkling.
Shikanda Raza from Zimbabwe as well. You're right, there is. That's our second ball. Moving on to our third ball. Menas, we're about 14 games in of a 90-game season. So is it a 90-game, or did I just make that up?
I think it's like 190. So
190, yep, sorry. who are the star players in your mind so far?
Well, it's not so much the star players. I've just had a bit of a look at some of the performances so far to give listeners a bit of a flavour of the way this IPL started. And it is a little bit different to last IPLs because for the last few years, because of COVID, they've been played in limited venues. But we're actually getting back to that classic home and away tournament style where home ground advantage is a legitimate thing, where you do see a variation in conditions. And we've seen that so far. So already in just 14 games, there's been six team scores over 200, the highest score being CSK's 217. So an interesting, so high scoring already. Batting wise, Shikhar Dhawan, the Punjab Kings captain, after three innings has made the most runs, 225, and he has the highest score, 99 not out. So he actually has only been he's not out twice. So his average is 225 after three matches. So hell of a start for him. That innings, though, happened on Sunday night, the same night as Singh's five sixes in a row. Dhawan made 99 not out out of 143 batting first for the Punjab Kings. So that's a Bannerman-like domination of the scoring, Paul.
Yeah, I noticed that at the time. I was thinking, as I often do, about Charles Bannerman's record from all those years ago in 1877. Just to your point, it's a good one around – actually, by the way, I think it's 70 group matches, not 90. But to your point around the fact that they are returning to the stadiums for the first time in a long time, it kind of crept up on me that because obviously with the COVID situation, some of the matches have been played in the UAE, some of the matches have been played in hubs. For many of these venues, it's about 4 years since they've actually been able to play in front of their home crowds. I was interested, you might have heard it as well, but I was listening to Barrett Sundaresan talking to Jared Waitley on SEN Radio in Australia, and Barrett was sort of making the point that the length of time that the fans have had to go without supporting their teams, almost counterintuitively, he thinks has actually strengthened the affinity for the teams, that even though it's only been a competition around for 16 years, and so it doesn't have the you know, parents and grandparents supporting the same teams and passing that on to their kids, that having to go without has really galvanized the bonds that fans have for their teams. And that definitely that the IPL this season so far is the biggest and best it's ever been in terms of the level of interest pouring through India.
I think it's because everyone, you know, appreciates what they lost now and is just thrilled to be able to go back and not taking that freedom of going to the cricket for granted. So Dhawan leading run scorer. Then you've got Gaikwad second, 189. Warner third, 158 runs. And Butler fourth, 152 runs. Butler's got the high strike rate, 180.95. So they're the top four leading run scorers. But Dhawan with 99 not out. Superb performance. This is what I'm going to be keeping track of throughout the IPL. Most sixes. So in just three matches, Gaikwad has hit 14 sixes. So if he goes on at this rate and plays all 14 games, he's going to score almost 100 sixes just himself. Kyle Mayers from the West Indies playing for the Lucknow Super Giants, 9 sixes. And, of course, Rinku Singh, 9 sixes, 5 of those coming in that last over. No slouches either. Faf du Plessis, who's playing for RCB, who's getting on a bit. He's almost 40, still hits the ball a long way. Shikhar Dhawan, we spoke about, 8 sixes. And at Shimron Hetmeyer, playing for the Royals, 8 sixes. averaging a tick under 100 and a strike rate a little bit under 180. So some destructive stuff already.
Yeah, there was that game where Coley and Pfaff came out and just absolutely got the runs on their own bats. I don't know if there's any player that I can think of just off the top of my head. I haven't done the numbers, but who's more different at test level than they are at T20 level. That Pfaff's absolutely explosive, but at test level he was a very, very sort of good, but you know, stodgy sort of player. The difference is enormous. But for me, I still think Butler is the best. If I had to pick one batter only for my side, if I was forming my own IPL side, Josh Butler is the number one. Ravi Bishnoi, the leg spinner who plays for Lucknow Super Giants, didn't have the greatest season sort of kicking off his career last year. He's kind of those who've bowled a fair bit, is leading the economy rates with 6.25. Ravi Ashwin and Mitch Santner up there as well. So as always, the spinners are doing really well. And for the quicks, Jason Holder, Trent Bolt, and Alzari Joseph have been bowling really well. I've had my doubts about Alzari Joseph at T20 level, but he's had a very good start to the tournament so far.
Yeah, on Pfaff du Plessis, I wonder if it's a little bit of the same thing that happened to Shane Watson, that once he was able to give up, you know, playing Test cricket and also 50-over cricket and just concentrate on the shortest form of the game, that he's really been able to improve some of those skills. All right, most wickets in the tournament so far, Mark Wood, 8 wickets. Yuzi Chahal, 8 wickets for the Royals. And sorry, Mark Wood, 8 wickets for the Lucknow Super Giants. He took the only 5-wicket haul, 5 for 14, bowled really quick. And Rashid Khan, 8 wickets as well for the Gujarat Titans.
I think he bowled the ball of the tournament, I think, Wood. It was 148 clicks, and it was just unplayable. I've forgotten who was facing it, but it was it was a very exciting spell. He got 2 wickets and 2 balls at one point and looked fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we'll keep an eye on this during the IPL, but a bit of interest heading into the Ashes. Woods playing in the IPL, also Archer. So interesting, sort of just keeping an eye on their fitness as the old enemy look to throw them against the Aussies later on this year. And looking at economy rates, best economy rates. Now, it's really early for this one, but of the bowlers who've bowled a lot, you mentioned Bishnoi, Ravi Ashwin, 6.41, 12 overs, just going at it just over a run a ball. Very good. Also, Mitch Santner going at just under 7 runs per over. And interesting, he's playing for the Chennai Super Kings, also Ravi Jadeja. So you've got 2 left-arm tweakers bowling very similar. And so far, their figures are very similar. So interesting if Santner can hold his spot in the team. With the tournament so far, probably one thing we have not mentioned so far is the big loss of Kane Williamson. I think he did a ligament to his knee very early in the tournament, and he's gone home and he's going to miss the 50-over World Cup. So, you know, Williamson's going to miss most of this year.
Yeah. I didn't realise he was going to miss the 50-over World Cup. So it was one of those ones that initially looked innocuous because it was a 6. He's one of those ones who's on the boundary, he's trying to stop the 6. And it didn't look so bad. But then clearly when he had to be helped from the field in some pain, yeah, that sucks. I'm disappointed for him significantly. Just on one other, before I forget it, the whole notion of, we'll probably come to this in our 6th ball of the Super Over, but that of Archer and Stokes and others warming up for the Ashes, you know, there's a lot of old men in England right now very, very angry that they should be in cotton wool in England or bowling, you know, loads of long, slow spells in county cricket, not bowling 4 overs or having a few slogs in India. That's the modern way there, that preparation is very different than it used to be.
So that's a look at things early on. Darwin at the top of the runs, some high scoring so far. Wood, the bowler to watch. I don't know what caps they're giving out this summer. I've got to check for the next show and we'll update you on the cap situation for the next episode. All right, now to ball number 4, Paul.
Yes. Now, I am a bit embarrassed by this. The fact that we have in Australia tried to get an impact player or some sort of substitution in cricket going for a while. I had that back in the 50-over tournament back in the day when you could sub one player out, and they used to laugh because Glenn McGrath always knew that if the toss went the right way, he'd be subbed out. And so he knew either way he wasn't going to be batting. And so he'd turn up to the game with just a tiny little, almost like a handbag, because he didn't need to bring his bats and gloves. But but more recently, it didn't really work in the Big Bash, the whatever they called it, the Superman,
the Kryptonite X-Factor, or whatever it's called,
something like that. And India's just tried it once and got it right perfectly, first time. Like, it's just like, I think that Australia was tiptoeing up to doing it, but still didn't want to cross a threshold. And the threshold's always been, you only have 11 players that can play, and anyone else who comes on can only field. Obviously, the concussion sub that has kind of changed that. But we were sort of saying, well, if a batter bats, then the next guy that comes on, if you just bring on a pure bowler, that's not right and everything. And India's just gone, actually, no, let's just do it that way. So what happens is you don't have to nominate your starting 11 until after the toss, so you know whether you're batting and bowling or bowling. You've got four subs that you can have on the bench, so you can kind of get the whole range of what you need to do. And what it means is that, you know, you could take I'll take the example of just this most that amazing game that we're just talking about. So Suyash Sharma, who is an up-and-coming leg spinner, played and he bowled one for 35. He's a specialist leg spinner. He bowled for KKR. Then when KKR were batting, at the fall of the first wicket, Venkatesh Iyer was subbed in place of Suyash Sharma and came out and belted 83 off 40. So you got four quality specialist overs and then a specialist batter. And I think this is absolutely how it should be, that it's not going the full length of Americanization, specialization that you have in, you know, like in the NFL, where you've got a specialist player to do absolutely everything, and it kind of goes down a path I don't think cricket wants to go down. But I think what it does do is it means that rather than, as we sometimes see, sort of dodgy or off spin off three steps being kind of shunted in to get the fifth bowler somehow out of the way, and it's removing that fifth bowler option that was a part-timer one way or the other. You can now have a specialist there and yet still have a specialist batter. I just think it improves the whole thing for the spectators. And how is it that Australia couldn't have realised this? And I think we should definitely copy this for the next Big Bash.
Interesting. I like the rule too. And I think it works perfectly for the IPL, because you've got very deep, talented squads. And as you say, you're not you're getting the best quality out there all the time. You're getting to see that extra batter or the extra quality overs that you spoke about. So I think it works really well for the IPL because of the deep benches. I don't know if it would translate as well to the Big Bash, where there's not the quality usually sitting on the bench. So I don't think it'd have the same impact as it does in the IPL. But I like the fact that you can name the team after the toss, and there's no funny rules. Basically, once you sub someone out, they're gone, and the new person coming in could do everything. I really like that. Do you think it does sort of change the role of an all-rounder, because it was really important, you know, to have that bowler, that, you know, that batter who could bowl those four overs? Do you think it nullifies that importance?
Good question. I don't think so. I think there's still scope for all-rounders. It might reduce it slightly, but you could still have a situation as well. You know, it's one of these ones that sometimes my head struggles to get to think it through. But if you had a situation where suddenly you were 5 for 30 and we've got to make the sub straight away and bring in another batter to help things out, and we'll let the second innings look after itself. Those sorts of things. If the other batter that you're going to bring in is someone who can bowl a bit as well, that's going to be definitely to your advantage. I just think it just takes out a few too many Darren Lehman sort of style bowlers bowling filthy off spin. I don't know why I picked on Darren Lehman there.
Oh, Darren. Shooting on it.
But I think that I think it can still work in Australia. I agree that the depth isn't there, but you would put players on the bench that you haven't done so heretofore. I mean, someone like Khawaja, who's not going to bowl, you could have him sitting on the bench with every intention that, okay, we're bowling first. You sit on the bench. Then as soon as the innings is over, you sub him on for the worst of the bowlers, the worst specialist bowler. So you're still getting a specialist batter replacing a specialist bowler, and both getting to do what they specialise in.
All right. So big fans, both Paul and I, of the impact player. Ball number four. All right, ball number five. Now, we're going to be doing power rankings throughout the IPL, sort of looking at not necessarily which team is on top of the ladder, but which is the hottest team for the week. Now, as this is our first show, we get a sort of, we get a slow start because we're just three games into the tournament or three rounds in. But I'll go through the ladder, then I'm going to pick my hottest team. And I just want to say that, and I don't want to knock the big bash, but the ladder really bloody means something in this tournament. There's 10 teams, only four make the finals. It's cutthroat. There's billions of dollars at stake. This is the big time. So, there's no gimmies in this ladder. It's not like most of the teams get a chance in the finals. You know, if you're finishing in the top four of a 10-team comp, you've played really well. There's no sort of sneaking into the finals. So at the moment, there's six teams on 4 points. The Royals are on top with the net run rate of 2. Then you've got the Kolkata Knight Riders in second spot on 4 points. Then Lucknow on 4 points, Gujarat on 4 points, Chennai on 4 points, and Punjab on 4 points. So they've all got 2 wins and they've all got 1 loss. No team is undefeated. And then you've got on 2 points, Royal Challengers Bangalore, who actually won a game. Sunrisers have won 1 of 3, so they're on 2 points. And then down the bottom, Mumbai, none from 2. The powerhouses of the tournament, a very slow start. Tim David hasn't done anything for them, so Paul will be disappointed. And Delhi Capitals, 3 games, 3 losses. So that's Ricky Ponting's team. So that's the ladder. Very early days. But I still think if you're Delhi, none from 3, you'd be nervous if you're Ricky Ponting for sure. And I'm going to pick my hottest team. It's a really easy one. Kolkata Knight Riders. They to win that game when they were, basically on the canvas, for Rinku Singh to pull out that performance. And, what it meant was the Gujarat Titans didn't become the only team on 6 points in the end. So I'm putting Kolkata Knight Riders as my hottest team of the week. They're my power ranking number one team. Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I would have them up there, but I also I really quite like the Rajasthan Royals as well. We've kind of picked the two teams at the top of the ladder, but I actually did this without
gutsy
knowing the
picks.
I actually did this without knowing the ladder because I hadn't looked at the ladder. I just thought, which of the teams that I think are the sort of the ones that I'm really impressed with.
Can I just backtrack a bit? Do you agree with me, though? Like, as opposed to Big Bash Lads, as opposed to a lot of other T20 comps, this ladder is it's like a real – it's a knife fight. It's 4 teams out of 10, 14 rounds. I mean, it's a proper comp.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you've got 10 going into 4, it's a lot more difficult than we've had with the Big Bash, where it's got to the point where it's what, 8 going into 5, where, yeah. That's – so But yeah, absolutely.
Sorry. Anyway.
No, continue. What would be great is if they could go to the next level and actually have a relegation thing. That would be pretty courageous if they had a team that sat out and then they said, right, next year, if you come 10th, you sit out and we bring the other team in.
Yeah.
That'd even.
Yeah, you have to play in the Big Bash. Suck on it.
Yes, exactly. So I like Rajasthan Royals with Butler. I like their bowling lineup that, I like Ashwin in there. I like Bolt, Chahal. There's no one in there as well that I look at and think, oh, he's a player that could get taken down. I sort of look at them as pretty solid. And I think Gujarat as well, that, Rashid Khan, Alzari Joseph, Mohammad Shami.
India.
Absolutely, yeah. And then they've got some other decent batters as well, so Gill and Saha, Miller, and even though Williamson is gone, he probably wasn't going to be an absolute dominant player for them. So it was interesting because I was listening to a podcast a few weeks ago where they were talking about how, yeah, they won it last year, but they won lots and lots of close games, and the law of averages will eventually catch them up. Well, it hasn't so far. They've started pretty well. So, I think that they're near the top. And just you mentioned Delhi Capitals. I'm a little bit concerned about them, and I'm also concerned about Sunrisers Hyderabad. I think that they're the two sides that worry me a little bit at the moment. If I was a fan of those two sides, but we need to put massive disclaimers in, of course, that this is the first week. these things will definitely change. So please don't go out and put money on these sides at our suggestion.
So who's your hottest team of the week?
My hottest team of the week is the Rajasthan Royals.
Okay. We've gone from one and two. Love it. All right. Now, so the final ball, the over. What have you got for us, Paul?
Okay. So Menas and I like the IPL and we like Big Bash cricket. We like T20 cricket. And I want to have this idea that for the future of cricket, we can have the best of both worlds. There's just a couple of articles that I read in the papers in the last few days from English journalists, and they're both kind of not negative about the future, certainly positive about the future of the IPL, but a little bit negative about the future of Test cricket and sort of comparing that to the IPL. So the first one from Jonathan Liu from The Guardian concluded with, I think this is a pretty cool line where he sort of said that the IPL is indifferent to your opinion of it. Your presence at the spectacle is not required, but you'll be present nonetheless because Joss Butler is teeing off at a strike rate of 240 and you will definitely want to watch that. In this country, he means England, you still frequently hear debates about how the IPL can be somehow constrained or accommodated, how the global game of cricket can weatherproof itself against its effects, to which the only response is just look at it. These are the debates that should have been probably happening 14 years ago. And then he's concluded, turn on the IPL now, and you can see Visit Saudi and Qatar Airways hoardings plastered across a stadium named after Narendra Modi while Dhoni thumps a pull shot into the screaming void. This, if you think about it, is probably what winning looks like. And the other one from Barney Rone made the point about this, the Ashes coming up and the excitement of it sort of Test cricket, but then added, but it is also the beginning of the end. It is tempting to glaze over a little when anyone starts to talk about the end of Test cricket. This is a sport that thrives on dying, that seems to have been dying with a robust sense of theatre since the day it was born. But this thing is actually happening now. That ice shelf really is shearing off right in front of us. Welcome to the last great summer of Tests. And he'd prefaced that with some comments around about the fact that players like Stokes were playing in the IPL and that the Ashes would eventually become something like golf's Ryder Cup, where it's sort of squeezed into a little few weeks and away we go. And it is being squeezed in. You know, it's five tests in 6 weeks. I don't agree with them. Maybe I'm naive, but I have the feeling that, especially seeing the huge interest in India of the India-Australia test series that's just gone, that we can have the best of both worlds and that we can have it such that, yeah, the IPL is going to dominate for... and it's going to be an ever-lengthening time. And when I said 90 matches before, that was because I was thinking, oh, it's 10 teams. They should be playing 90 matches. They haven't got to that level yet, but they will soon. And so that'll extend it to an even longer period of time. But I still think that maybe along the lines of a soccer window where there'll be international time, and we have to have condensed test series and really squeeze them in a little bit, but that's okay. I still think we can get the best of both worlds, that the IPL and other tournaments can be great fun to watch, but we'll still have test cricket to enjoy for years to come. I don't think it's dying. What do you think?
Well, interesting points you bring up. I think the future is here. I think if you look at the future tours program and we saw the difference in the schedules between some of the richest nations who have quite a bit of test cricket and then some nations playing a lot less test cricket. And I think if you look at the calendar now, it is dominated by T20 competitions and, you know, this trend of the IPL franchises buying up teams in other competitions around the world does lend itself to employing players year round, and you're starting to see players from smaller countries, but not limited to smaller countries, retiring from red ball cricket, not accepting contracts, so they're available to be employed from franchises. So the writers are right that the cricket is changing in front of us, and it's changing very fast, and it's going to be very different to what we grew up with. But I tend to agree with you that overall, there are more opportunities for cricketers. So more young people, when they're looking at taking up professional sport, will see cricket as a valid alternative. Like, in the, you know, it's, if you're not good enough to bat, play in the test team, oh, well, bad luck, you don't have a career. No, there's a lot of other ways. So, and also, it's like you said, that we will have those windows where the tests, those sort of marquee test series are played. But I guess I see where the riders are coming from, but overall, I think there's more money coming into the game. More and more people are playing it. There's more opportunities. There's more competitions. Every day I turn on, there's more and more cricket to watch. But Test cricket, as we know, it certainly is changing. And, you know, we saw a one-off Test match between Bangladesh and Ireland last week. It was fantastic. But, you know, who knows when Ireland will next play a Test match.
Yes, I agree. And I think that what maybe some people need to think about is, what would the world look like without T20 cricket and without the IPL, the cricketing world? Because the rest of the sporting world has moved ahead very, very quickly. And I don't think if we had no T20 and no IPL and no franchise cricket, I don't think cricket would be thriving. I don't think we'd be, you know, oh, we're looking forward to the next five Test series and Test cricket is still dominating. I think that the world was moving on and cricket would have become a smaller and smaller sport without it. And so when you see the stats that the IPL now on a per game basis is the second most lucrative television rights sport in the world, I think that's wonderful. I feel pride for cricket. And yeah, as I said, I think in its absence, cricket would be in a much worse situation. It's going to be different in the future, but you know, I'm not as scared by it as maybe some people are.
Yes, and I just echo what I said during the India-Australia Test Series. I actually just want to get to India now and soak up this passion and this love for the game.
Yes. We've got to be
all right.
There.
Absolutely. All right, so that's it. That's our first IPL Super Over show, done and dusted. Six balls every week. We're going to be doing it around Monday night, fallback Tuesday night.
Quickly acknowledge a couple of comments. I might quickly acknowledge them. Sorry to jump in.
Okay. No, go for it.
So just Naaman Garg said, will David want to play his last Test match in the World Test Championship final? Every possibility. Sorry, guys, Nathan Ellis looks like a running spinner. He does a bit, but he's still very good. And he made the same point as you, that he doesn't like the impact player because it removes the all-rounder option. Gershan Singh Sanger, Pujara is the only non-contracted batter who has his place set in the Indian World Test Championship final 11. Good point. And then lastly, from Robin Summon, do you think the Indian players should forfeit the last three or four games of the IPL and head to England to prepare for the World Test Championship? Absolutely, they should. And the chances of that happening is zero. And they probably shouldn't, actually. They should stick with their franchises and do their best when they get to England.
All right, so that is it for the Super Over show. So if you're listening on the podcast, Paul and I are about to record an update with some cricket news, so download and listen to that one.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.